Hey, this is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett, and you're listening to Squared Circle Gazette Radio.
The Chosen One.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 25th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase, Carl Jones,
Go Bulls,
and Kieran O'Rourke.
Evening.
And with this being the 25th episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio, we did say last week that we had a very special guest. You heard him off the top of the show. We had a chance to talk to Jeff Jarrett earlier in the week regarding Global Force Wrestling and Wrestle Kingdom 9 on January 4th. So what we're going to do for this episode, we are going to play the interview right now, straight away, no waste of time, and then we're going to come back shortly afterwards to give you our takes on Jeff's thoughts regarding Global Force Wrestling and Alternative. It was a great chance to talk to Jeff. So hopefully people enjoy this, and we'll be right back after the news. Let's throw it now to Double J, Big Daddy himself. All right, we are joined right now by Jeff Jarrett, the founder of Global Force Wrestling. Jeff, it is a pleasure to have you with us, and how are you enjoying your Christmas week so far?
Oh, it's fantastic. Thanks, Liam, for having me on. You know, it is the holiday season, but all of us here at Global Force Wrestling are sort of working around the clock. We're enjoying the holiday time, but it's an exciting time of year because, as you know, we got a lot coming up, and looking forward to the new year, and probably more importantly, looking forward to January 4th.
Absolutely, and that is obviously the main topic of discussion today. January 4th, Wrestle Kingdom 9, New Japan Pro Wrestling hits pay-per-view in the United States. It's available on the Flips app here in the UK, and you can get that on your Xbox, you can get that on your Android phone, it's available on the iPhone as well. Jeff, this whole thing, correct me if I'm wrong, but the idea of putting New Japan Pro Wrestling on pay-per-view, Jim Ross on commentary, this was all your brainchild, correct?
Well, I'd like to take all the credit. No, I mean, when I launched Global Force Wrestling, it was April 7th, 2014, and it seemed like just yesterday, but wow, it was many months ago. New Japan approached myself, and they knew they wanted to present their product outside of Japan. They wanted to mainly make a splash onto the North American scene. So we sat down, and it became very obvious to me, what better way than to make a splash, the biggest splash, than to bring the Dome Show to North America? And then as one thing led to another, it became, the timing of everything, just the stars have aligned. You mentioned Jim Ross. And then when we added the Flips app,
oh, yeah,
that anywhere in the world, in technology grand, but that, this became... It just became, it was big enough to begin with if it was just the Dome Show with 50,000 plus fans. But when you take the North American pay-per-view distributed all over the United States, all over Canada, in your, traditional pay-per-view way, and then we added Flips app, it has become the most widely distributed pay-per-view in the history of professional wrestling. That takes in a lot of ground. We're very proud of it. And I'm just blessed and thankful and very grateful that we have the opportunity to be a part of it, and really, really looking forward to it.
I understand that it was Kidani, the New Japan president, who actually had kind of made public comments that he wanted Jim Ross himself as well. Is that correct?
Well, it was sort of a step-by-step process. I'm not sure of their exact viewpoint, but who wouldn't want Jim Ross? I knew that when we closed the deal between Global Force Wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling, and we made it public at the G1 finals at the Cebu Dome back in August, that, the next steps were to close the pay-per-view deal. And once we did that, it was obviously who were we going to get to be the English announcer. I knew right away, when the best is available, you absolutely go after the best. So I've dealt with Jim's management people. They're great, honest, stand-up, very fair, easy to deal with. I reach out, and next thing we closed the deal. New Japan was very happy. Global Force was very happy. But more importantly, the wrestling fan base just exploded, and we're very, very happy.
Yeah, it's a strange dynamic, because the whole idea of promoting a pay-per-view, a traditional pay-per-view, without television, I mean, the videos that Kevin Sullivan's produced have been fantastic. Jim Ross has been a star on those. I was willing to ask you very quickly, actually, along the lines of Jim Ross, because there are so many people who, through this do this show, or even just people I know, and I always try and get people to convert to New Japan and watch New Japan, but that the lack of English commentary has really been a barrier for a lot of people. So I'm thinking, you know, that the idea of Jim Ross, the voice of our generation for wrestling fans, I mean, this is a huge coup.
I couldn't agree more. And then, you know, when we made the announcement with Matt Stryker, it took things to another level, because Matt, you know, he's had obviously some WWE notoriety. He's currently working with Lucha Underground and AAA, who we also have a partnership with. But he's a great compliment for Jim. He's immersed himself. He's obviously, after many conversations with the guy, he is a student of New Japan, and he knows not just the 10 matches that he's going to be broadcasting, but the entire history of New Japan Pro Wrestling. So when fans tune in, if you're a wrestling fan, it is going to be one memorable night, because you're going to tune in, and it's a fresh new product, and Jim Ross, a voice you're very comfortable with. He obviously is going to be carrying the story load and the backstory and the history. It's going to be an epic night.
It is indeed. And I was kind of wanting to ask you, because we threw this out. We told you that we announced that Jeff Jarrett was going to be on our show. The bombardment of questions from emailers has just been overwhelming. And one of the things, obviously, people did want to ask, because over the last week, there's been a lot of names that have come out that, you know, were maybe under consideration. Guys like John Pollock from the Fight Network. I saw Dave Meltzer's name get mentioned. Mauro Ranallo, I saw his name mentioned as well. Was there any kind of one individual element that made you go with Matt Stryker, or was it just strictly his knowledge of the history?
I guess the very top prerequisite had to be a compliment to Jim Ross, because Jim Ross is, and I've said it on multiple interviews, he has been, and for what he does as a part of this business, as a broadcaster, he's been the guy, not just one of the guys, he's been the guy for over 20 years. So obviously, as far as the announce team goes, he's the focus. So whoever we sat beside Jim had to be a huge compliment. And Matt fit that like a glove perfectly, as well as knowing the entire knowledge and the history and the backstory. And Matt's got a real passion, not just for New Japan Pro Wrestling, but pro wrestling in general, whether it be, you know, the independent scene in Europe, the independent scene down in Australia. Matt's very qualified and knows got a very depth of knowledge of it. And so those are the main two things that had to go with it.
Just a quick note. I read online this week that in Japan, ticket sales for the Tokyo Dome show are actually about 50% ahead of where they were this time last year. So obviously in Japan, the interest is there. How are you gauging interest here from an American perspective, whether it's, you know, worldwide? How do you feel the interest is for this show?
It is exploded. When I knew that I was going to do Jim Ross's podcast first, that I wanted to, you know, start my quote-unquote media tour, you know, me and Jim agreed when we closed the deal that you know, I would do his podcast and start the promotion there and announce his partner and everything that went in with that. But literally, I have since last Wednesday, I have not stopped talking about this because of the media request. And Jim Ross, you know, he talked to Fox Sports Net, ESPN, and many, many major newspaper publications. Just our PR and media requests for myself, for Jim, the Bullet Club. I'm very grateful and thankful, but literally it has consumed me 6 to 8. I think it was last Friday. I think I talked almost nine hours with print and podcast. And so the interest level is through the roof. It has just exploded.
It's got to be very encouraging from your perspective, Jeff. From a fan's standpoint, we mentioned before, there's going to be a lot of, we would assume, first-time viewers to New Japan Pro Wrestling. In your opinion, as a guy who's, you know, 28 years in the business, which Japanese wrestlers in New Japan do you think would get over best to an American audience?
And I'll sort of broaden that as not just an American audience. I'll say a global audience, whether it be Australia or the United Kingdom or South Africa. The guys that are in the main event, there's four or five, but the guys in the main event, Tanahashi, he's at the top of his game. He's a rock star. He oozes charisma. When people tune in and just see him walk to the ring, you're going to know right away that the guy's a star. The guy is just a megastar. It's like if you pull somebody out of, I don't know, a foreign country and they'd never seen One Direction, and you take them to you know, Wembley Stadium, and you see those guys perform, you wouldn't have to know one song to know, okay, these guys are mega rock stars. That's Tanahashi. And then Okada, his opponent, the Rainmaker, is right on that level. And their rivalry, you know that you're going to be seeing a very, very intense rivalry. Those are the main two guys. You know, when you walk through Tokyo. I just got a call this morning talking to a business associate over there, and they were talking about just the advertising that on all the trains and the subways and that just everywhere you go, you see Wrestle Kingdom 9 advertised, and just the build, the excitement, the promotion. You mentioned Kevin Sullivan's videos that we've produced thus far. Just rolling out this week is going to be, we call them match specific. That it's really talking about, you know, the matchups. And so all of it, the promotion is just, you can feel the groundswell really starting to peak. And by January 4th, we all expect it to be a fever pitch.
Yeah, I think so too. Another one of those guys who I think would fit in very well pretty much anywhere he went if he got a chance would be Shinsuke Nakamura, who's also wrestling on the show against Kota Ibushi. I think that guy's just got so much charisma.
He does. You know, he's got that uniqueness about him that his background, you know, is such a, I mean, that dude, you don't mess with him. but he's another guy like Tanahashi that just has that charisma, has that it factor, been a main event guy for so long. And then, you know, Naito, AJ's opponent, he's coming up and right on that level. They're just, you know, from top to bottom, all 10 matches are just fantastic matches.
Just to kind of talk about, you mentioned the media tour. You're doing a lot of radio. I heard you on Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez's podcast last week, and you mentioned that obviously anything like this, there's always a great deal of work and there's always a lot of elbow grease involved. I just wanted to ask, what were some of the main challenges in terms of putting this deal together?
Oh, wow. It's, Liam, I'd have to say, you know, it started, like I said, back in April. And when you have time zones, you have culturals, you have a language barrier, just getting the deal structure on the table, not agreed to, just getting the deal structure on the table. It was a very laborious process. But you know, a good deal is when it's a win-win. And so that's what we arrived at just on the beginning of the deal structure. And then, you know, when you're dealing with pay-per-view companies, I think there's 9 different agreements in place from DirecTV, Dish Network, oh gosh, Xfinity, which is Comcast. And then, you know, there's 6 in the United States, different contracts. And then you go up to Canada and you have
Rogers up there, I think, as well. Yeah.
Rogers. Yeah. That. And then you turn around and Flips, which is a obviously brand new technology, never been done in their world. You know, getting the content delivered to them, the videos, they've been great to work with. Those guys are trendsetters. And we're very blessed to be partnered with a company that, you know, all this new technology that, you know, my partner's down in South Africa, you know, we're going back and forth. And I asked him a couple of weeks ago, I said, all right, there's no need for you to BS me. Are you going to be watching the show? He said, not only are we going to be watching it, we've already created some viewing parties. So there's 3 or 4 different viewing parties that are in the process of being planned. And to think that a guy in South Africa is going to be watching a show via an app and live in Tokyo, it just, you know, blows my mind. But it's fantastic. I'm sure you guys are going to be doing the same. And
oh yeah,
when you think about watching a pay-per-view through an Xbox live from Tokyo, and where are you from? Shrewsbury, you say?
Yeah, we're based in Shrewsbury.
Yeah, that's cool. It's really such a unique and we're, you know, Global Force is very proud that we're a part of this.
Yeah, it's actually interesting that you mentioned that there, that kind of the technology, the fact that, you know, the world is becoming a more and more smaller place. It's easy to see it all over the world now. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on this, Jeff, because obviously, you know, this is on traditional pay-per-view in America. And for the last few years, we've been hearing these murmurings from people like Vince McMahon and Dixie Carter about how they personally feel that pay-per-view is a dying industry. Is that something that you agree with, or is that something that, from my own personal perspective, I don't? But I kind of want to see what your take on that is.
Well, when you try 12 a year, it's absolutely, you know, I think the return, and Vince, yes, everything is going online. You know, I'm everything is headed online, obviously. But UFC, you know, Floyd Mayweather, if you ask them if the pay-per-view industry is a dying breed, they would laugh at you.
Yeah, precisely.
I mean, yeah, Floyd Mayweather is, I think he's lining up to do a one night, I think he'll make over $100 million, his cut. So it's not, but you have to have that special event. I understand that, you know, if you do 12 a year, the return's not there, especially when there's so much programming out there. So I understand both sides of the coin, but in this specific set of circumstances, you can't watch New Japan 2-hour, 3-hour weekly show with the same matchups. you can only watch Tanahashi, Okada, Nakamura. I can go all the way down the line. You can only see this Four Corners tag match with the Time Splitters and the Forever Hooligans and the Young Bucks and Red Dragon. You can only see this January 4th live from the Tokyo Dome. And I've said it on podcasts and print interviews. It has truly become the can't miss show of the year.
Just on the subject of can't miss shows, Jeff, because obviously you mentioned, and it's just, the three biggest shows in the year in the world are WrestleMania, Wrestle Kingdom, and Triple Mania, Triple A show. And one of the questions that came to us, and it's actually something I want to ask you myself, if the opportunity presented itself, would you be keen with the Hispanic population in America to maybe try this kind of a thing with Triple Mania, should this one go well, or is it all just all eyes on Wrestle Kingdom 9 right now, and if this succeeds, then we'll consider other options?
We have our contracts in place with the pay-per-view distributors, but obviously we're laser focused on January 4th, and you know, the success of this show won't be 100% dependent on our future plans, but it's certainly going to be a great indicator. And you know, you mentioned Triple Mania. I'm in discussions with multiple international partners to bring a product to the North American and now to the global audience via the Flips app. So yes, to answer your question is yes. We are in discussions about the potential of bringing international shows again, other than New Japan.
That's tremendous. It's actually, and this brings us ultimately to Global Force Wrestling, which you founded. And we've heard a lot over the last week or so, that the phrase standalone company has been bandied around a lot for what you kind of envision this to be eventually. I'm curious though, Jeff, because obviously you founded TNA as well in 2002, and obviously this go around with Global Force. What were the main lessons that you learned the first time with TNA in terms of founding a company, whether it's things to do or things not to do, that have really kind of stood you well here setting up Global Force?
In life, you if you don't learn from everything you're around, good, bad, or indifferent, you got to absorb it and look it and around. Not saying that I learned this from the past, but what I do know, and I'm a guy that like my grandmother used to say, there's a reason that the rearview mirror is smaller and the windshield's bigger. Look toward the future, and I do. I want to look toward the future, and in that process, I understand that brand awareness, whether it is a main event match, whether it's launching a company, any type of product, and not just in wrestling, entertainment, music, whatever. If you rush a product to market before it's ready, it can really be a fatal mistake. So we are taking our time, step by step, creating brand awareness with Global Force Wrestling, and obviously through producing this New Japan event, it is creating massive brand awareness. So that's one thing. Patience isn't in my DNA. I've said it over and over, but I also understand that you really have to be methodical and strategic and step-by-step about bringing your product to market.
How do you feel, just in broad terms, how do you feel about the wrestling landscape these days? Because, obviously not asking you to knock anybody by any means. I heard you on Jim Ross's show, and you seem to enjoy the TLC pay-per-view a great deal. But from my perspective, there is a little bit of a waning interest in what the WWE is putting out right now. Raw's rating last week, I understand, was the lowest in a while. The network number isn't where they want it to be. Do you see a gap in the market right now, and is that kind of what you're looking to pounce on?
I truly believe that again, I brought it out other than wrestling. In any type of entertainment, fans are always wanting something new, something a little different. And that's where Global Force is. That's where I'm again, looking for market share. And that fundamentally, I think the business, I've said it back in January and February and March, and I've repeated myself. I believe the wrestling industry is just on the cusp of a major boom. Ring of Honor stepping their game up. They're going to traditional pay-per-view. Lucha Underground. They have launched, and it took them 5 years. It literally took them 5 years to bring AAA's product to market. And so it's a long process, but they're here now. TNA got their deal with Destination America, which I think there were months of a lot of speculation. I don't know the ins and outs, but there were some worrying times. I know personally from different talent. But congrats, hats off to those guys. They got their deal, and so Global Force is rolling out in 2015 on a global scale. So I believe that there is a huge potential, and that the wrestling rising tides rises all ships. I think there's an opportunity here, and that's where I'm looking strategically to seize the opportunities.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting there, because you mentioned TNA's TV deal, and one of the things I wanted to ask you, obviously, TV is so important to any wrestling company. Global Force, obviously, you said you're rolling this out strategically, you're not going to rush this. the right TV deal, from our perspective in England, obviously we're a little bit, we're not in the midst of it in America the way that you are. So from your perspective, how is the TV landscape right now when it comes to professional wrestling in America? Is there that kind of resistance maybe to something new, or have you found that there are people who have open ears?
No, I mean, we're in multiple discussions with several networks, but the right deal has to be done. You know, you can't just do, you know, my attorneys tell me, sometimes your best deals are the ones that you don't do. And that's, a guy like me, that's hard to absorb at times. But, you know, Axis, failed to mention a few minutes ago, they acquired New Japan.
That's right.
I think they've got a 13-week run. I think Lucha Underground has a 39-week. I'm not sure exactly sure, but they've got a run. So brand exposure is the key. Brand awareness is the key. That when you to create revenues in this business, and Vince McMahon is a genius off of that. Yes, his domestic deal is fantastic with NBC Universal. But it's just a piece of his puzzle. He has international deals, obviously an enormous touring business, merchandise, licensing, sponsorships, pay-per-view with, you know, he's still in the pay-per-view game once a year with Mania, his online network. So the revenue streams in wrestling are broad and very deep. And so TV is one component of a wrestling promotion.
Just along those lines, because I saw you, I think it was the Dave Meltzer interview I mentioned earlier on, where you said that, you know, when it comes to brass tacks, when it comes time for GFW to be rolled out, you wanted to kind of get back to the fundamentals of wrestling a little bit more. I just kind of wanted you to expand on that a little bit and kind of give people an idea of, I mean, if this comes to be, your psychology and what wrestling is, and what kind of wrestling TV do you kind of look at as a blueprint in your own mind maybe, or do you just kind of, you have an idea of what you like and you want to get things back to the emotion of wrestling?
Well, I'm not going to sort of reveal any of my quote-unquote trade secrets, because we've got some things that we're very excited about on how we're going to present it. But I think Jim Ross, I'll steal his line. One of the things he said was, don't overthink it. New Japan doesn't overthink it. I don't think AAA overthinks it. I think sometimes in the process, and I totally understand, when you're producing, you know, 3 hours on a Monday and 2 hours on a Thursday, you know, that's 5 hours of content that WWE's, and I'm not pointing specifically to them, because, you know, in my days at TNA, they're dealing with it. When you have to consistently put out massive amount of content, sometimes it's not easy, but at the end of the day, this business is built on championships, hard-hitting, very, very hard-hitting action, where guys, this ain't ballet, I think Jim said, yeah, you know, you got to get in there and mix it up, and then larger-than-life personalities, and that's what New Japan's about, that's what January 4th is going to be about, that's what Global Force is going to be about, in that not overthinking professional wrestling.
You mentioned Jim Ross there. I want to go back to Jim Ross very briefly, just because there's a couple of questions that was on my mind anyway when it came to Jim. When it came to putting this deal together with JR, I mean, was he keen? Did he jump all over it straight away?
Jim, the short answer is, you know, obviously the deal, this is a business. He knows that. I know that. Once the deal was in place, Jim was all, I mean, he has been all over it. It has consumed him as well. We're all cut from the same mold. It's our passion. It's what we have done our entire lives. You guys that report on it pump us up, and you don't even know it because your enthusiasm and then your listeners and your emails. And, you know, I'll call it synergy, because, you know, that's what we all enjoy. That's what makes this business fun and passionate. And that's why we're still in it, because we got a passion for it. So, yes, Jim is very excited.
Oh, it's good to hear. I will say, one of the email questions, and this is veering off topic slightly, but I do want to actually get your thoughts on this, because I thought you'd be a good guy to ask. Somebody emailed in and wanted to know how you compare Jim Ross on the all-time great announcers list compared to Lance Russell.
Jim's the best. Jim has no peers. And that's zero disrespect to Lance or anybody else. They had a different style. Me and Jim the other day had a conversation briefly about Lance and just different announcers. But you know, Lance came from a different era. He was on for in Memphis 90 minutes, and you know the tape was condensed to an hour. It was just a different era. Very, very good, very engaging. Lance evoked emotion as well, like all good broadcasters do.
Yeah, he was tremendous. He's had the thing I love about Lance when I watch old Memphis stuff is the fact that he just seems like the rock of normalcy amidst a crazy world, and he's the one. You see what I'm saying? He's like the one voice of normalcy, maybe like the fan at home. That's all I love about Lance. But Jim Ross does have that great ability to call the big match, which I love about Jim, and I can't wait to see what he's going to do with it with Tanahashi and Okada. I'm keen though, Jeff, to kind of get your perspective on this when it comes to your match, because you're wrestling on the Tokyo Dome. It's something that hasn't been, you know, brought up by the other interviews. I mean, how are you looking forward to it as a performer to be on a show of this magnitude, because it's yourself, Bad Luck Fale, and Yujiro Takahashi of the Bullet Club going up against Haruyoshi Tenzan, Satoshi Kojima, and Tamawaki Honma. And I mean, just from, you know, after 28 years in the business, everything you've done, do you still get that kind of buzz, the butterflies, for something like this? Or are you kind of, you know, you're so focused and tunnel visioned on making this a success, you know, on pay-per-view and on flips? Is that kind of taking your priority at the moment, or are you kind of eager to get out there?
Well, first off, I've got a congrats to you. I'm impressed. You went from Lance Russell, and I didn't realize what a student of the game, and you jumped from Memphis, and you're spot on Lance. That's legit. He was even keeled around a crazy promotion Memphis days with lots of. It was nuts. But anyway, we'll segue. Then you segued, and you didn't miss a beat announcing all the proper Japanese names. I'm impressed.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
To answer your question, I always keep myself, or I try to keep myself in pretty good shape. But I can tell you, when they reached out, now it's been 5-6 weeks ago, and wanted me to be a part of the show as a wrestler, first off, I mean, yes, it's my first time. I was thrilled to death. And to, you know, be a part of the Bullet Club, stepping into the Dome Show, I just got back from the gym. I am focused. I took a couple of bookings this month to get back in the ring, because there's nothing like ring shape. But to be, you know, going out there and then facing Homa, is they love him in Japan.
But oh, he's tremendous.
But to be facing Tenzin and Kojima, guys that I watched, you know, in the 90s with one of my best friends, Scott Steiner, and Rick had that great run of tag matches. But to be facing those guys, I mean, it's. I'm super psyched. I am gonna be. I'm laser focused on everything, the match, the promotion, all the above. So yeah, it's a very exciting, and I can't tell you how grateful I am to, like, and you nailed it. 28 years in the business, and I'm stepping in and being on a Dome Show, and it's, you know, 50,000 plus fans. I'm super psyched.
Yeah, it's the cool thing. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I guess everybody wants to be, you know, have that chance to be on the big show, and it's cool that, you know, you are getting this opportunity. I was going to ask how you felt physically, because obviously, you know, all the wrestling you've done over the years, everything that you've done, how are you feeling physically? You said there that you're feeling pretty good.
Very good. I'll tip my hat to DDP yoga. But I started yoga probably, gosh, now maybe 2 years. I don't know, 18 months ago, a while ago. And I feel better than I have in years. You know, I wore many different hats over the last 12 years at TNA. So, you know, it was at times it was hard to get everything in once, and got a wife and 5 kids. There's a lot going on, but I stuck to the yoga and the weights and the cardio. I feel great.
It's an interesting thing. Again, just another segue. Obviously, you coming back, you mentioned at the Cebu Dome, joining the Bullet Club. How does it feel now that you've been kind of amongst the Bullet Club? Because in America and over here, certainly, the Bullet Club's the cool thing. The Bullet Club's the group that everybody kind of, they're wearing the t-shirts and such. In Japan, what's the reaction to the Bullet Club? Do they see them more as like the traditional heels amidst the kind of sporting environment? Like, how is it?
Let me jump to this past, last Saturday? I was in Rahway, New Jersey, and Bullet Club shirts everywhere.
Yeah, we've seen a lot here too.
Everywhere, and that's a real indicator that they hadn't stepped onto the North American scene. But me and AJ Styles and Carl and Doc were at that show, and Bullet Club shows everywhere. But in Japan, it's a mixture that they are quote unquote traditional bad guys, but also it's that cool vibe. And as you know, the Japanese wrestling audience are very respectful, very appreciative. But, you know, when you have guys, and that's what, you know, Kevin Nash made a comment, and there's a video that's out. He was comparing the difference between NWO and there's a mutual respect there in the Bullet Club. But he thought the Bullet Club was much more athletic. And, you know, from Fergal Devitt, one of the original members, to Carl Anderson, to on up. And then when you put AJ Styles and Kenny Omega and Doc and Carl and the Young Bucks, just think about the names I mentioned. All those guys are badass and very, very, very good at what they do.
Absolutely. And it goes back again to that kind of, I mean, there's so many good guys in New Japan. There's so much talent. The depth is unbelievable. To have the Bullet Club come along, and it's really helped. AJ's had a phenomenal year in New Japan. And obviously, he's going to be on the show. AJ Styles against Tetsuya Naito. We mentioned Shinsuke Nakamura and Kota Ibushi, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kazuchika Okada in the main event for the IWGP Championship. With this depth on the show, our last question here, Jeff. With the depth on this show, I mean, you've got a 4-hour window on pay-per-view. I'm assuming that New Japan is well aware that they have a 4-hour window to work within. Is that something that they're kind of, that, you know, they kind of feel like they've got it in the bag and it's going to be okay, everything's going to go all right on the night?
Well, I mean, the six P's, proper planning prevents piss poor performance. That we're all focused on that. Yes, they're well aware. You know, the production process has been ongoing. You know, the battle pre-show battle roll. But no, they realize that you know, I think it's 4 local time that the clock starts, and that, you know, it's going to be an enormous spectacle, and it's something that we're all very excited for and all very focused on.
And just for anybody listening out there, if you've never seen a Tokyo Dome show before, if you've never seen New Japan Pro Wrestling before, this is the show to get. Jim Ross doing commentary, an incredible card. I mean, the card speaks for itself, Jeff.
10 matches, 4 hours, Jim Ross calling it. It just doesn't get any better. It really doesn't. And you named it. When you think about an AJ Styles single match, and that's where AJ does his very, very best stuff. Kenny Omega singles match. Our 6-man tag is pretty cool. The 4 corners match. Nakamura in a singles match, and his opponent. The Sakuraba match. The MMA rules match. The main. It really is. I did Piper's podcast, and when I was laying out the card for him, you could hear in his voice, and he wasn't very knowledgeable at the time about the specifics of the car. You could hear the excitement in his voice. And you know, I talked to him afterwards. He said, "Kid, you guys got a winner there." He said, "I'm thoroughly impressed." And I said, "Yep, Rod." I said, "It's one of those nights that have all fallen into place." I said, "You know, back in your days when you knew you guys that WrestleMania was hot, and the Cyndi Lauper and the Mr. T and all those things. It's just, you know, back in the day when wrestling that initial real global boom." I said, "You guys knew you had something special." He said, "Yeah, we did." And he said, "I get the feeling that you guys have something really special." I'm like, "We do."
It's got to be exciting to be on the cusp of something like this, Jeff. I want to thank you very much for doing the show. I want to thank you for answering all the questions. Merry Christmas and all the best to you with Global Force and Wrestle Kingdom 9 on January 4th.
Thank you, my friend, Liam. We won't be strangers. We do this again in the new year. And happy holidays, happy new year, and January 4th, you better be in front of that Flips app.
Oh, you know it. Take care, Jeff.
Thanks.
All right, so there you have it. We are back. We've just played the interview for the panel for the first time. First of all, before we actually get to thoughts on this, I want to thank Ashley Griffiths and Brosley FM for actually being able to hook me up with this interview. Very much, very much appreciated. Initial thoughts around the table on this?
Yeah, never reveal your secrets. Just claim you're like your best buds and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry. Oh, me and Jay, I mean, yeah, we go way back. Yeah, but
yeah, you seem like you were pretty tight.
I know.
To be honest, yeah. well, yeah, I mean, just for myself, I'd like to thank him for, you know, giving us time to do the interview and so on, and also best of luck on January 4th. Yeah, the main things I'm getting just immediately from the interview is this: one, January 4th is going to be fucking amazing. I mean, usually when you look at the Wrestle Kingdom cards, this is coming from a fan, Wrestle Kingdom cards usually aren't the best. There's usually like 2 or 3 matches which you think are fantastic, and then there's like a few in the undercard where you're just thinking, you know what, I could probably skip those.
They could mix and match a little bit better sometimes, perhaps.
This year, though, like, the card is really stacked. I mean, it's just like, from even like as I said, like, you know, the 6-man and so on, the fatal 4-way for the junior tags.
Omega and Taguchi should be good. Taguchi. Ishii.
Yeah, Sakuraba versus Suzuki should be interesting, how they perform that.
MMA rules.
There's a lot of great matches on this. So this is like the first time probably since, like, you know, the G1 Climax shows where we might actually have a great show from beginning to end that's worth watching. Also, just kind of like find it interesting about, like, when he was talking about GFW, mainly about the whole taking his time thing and what he's learned from TNA, because if he's been genuine about that and how, like, that's something that he's learned from TNA, then that's probably the best lesson you could learn from that company. And it's kind of actually strange, because when he actually mentions it and says that he made the initial announcement back in April, they have taken their time with announcing details of the company, full stop. Not just the New Japan stuff, but just the company as a whole. Almost infuriatingly so. Looking at the current climax, looking at the current situation in wrestling, TNA rush so much, and even WWE now are just rushing through stuff. If he needs to take his time to get the company right, then that's absolutely what he needs to do.
Skimp on foreplay, that's what I say. I think the thing coming from Jeff, obviously he had his promoter hat on, plugging the show, but I think what really comes through is his, you know, at heart, he just loves wrestling.
And yeah, it's a genuine enthusiasm for this too. I mean, you can't, as things like, obviously he's a pro, he's been a promoter plenty of times for things like this, but he's does have a very kind of an upbeat tone to his voice. I was talking to him off air for a little while afterwards, and he's just super keen on this entire project. He loves the project, loves being involved on this level, and he's keen to talk about it. And he mentioned there like how this, you know, the energy from fans is kind of, you know, helping boost them up. What do you think? I'm actually kind of keen to know what you guys think. Carl, jumping on this about, you know, the TV environment, and you know, he mentioned that he's got multiple people that he's talking to, and he's kind of waiting for the right deal and not just kind of jumping into something, because as kind as he was to the TNA deal, the Destination America one, there, that is a terrible deal. It's a terrible TV deal. It is what it is, and I'm guessing that's the thing, he doesn't want to do this if it's going to be a half-assed deal like Destination America, with no offense to them, I guess. But
no, when it comes to TNA's deal, I think Columbus had an easier time, you know, discovering America than I will finding TNA on Destination America. But the enthusiasm...
You've been trying to get him for weeks, Scott.
Oh, I've been desperate for that.
He's literally looking at his phone where he's written this down previously right now.
The sort of overbiding takeaway from that interview was the way the enthusiasm comes across. You know, promoter hat or no promoter hat, you can hear the genuine enthusiasm in his voice. When it comes to the idea of GFW as a standalone promotion, I thought it was interesting the way he talked about it as sort of more of a philosophy based around belts and sort of the sporting element of which we all around this table, you know, all love that sort of thing.
I was trying to push him a little bit further on that, because one of the things I heard him say that I was intrigued by in his previous interviews. So I was going to try, you know, the line of questioning I had was along the lines of trying to, you know, is there a TV show historically that you can compare what you would like to do to? But at the same time, I think he's kind of reluctant to do that, because ultimately what he did point to was New Japan. And New Japan, there's a reason why, to me, New Japan works so well at the moment for me as a wrestling fan anyway, is because they don't fuck around. They just do what you want, you know. Give you what you want.
Well, that was it. Sort of the I think the line he used was don't overthink it, which, you know, I don't think there's a more apt way to describe it, the way you have a, you know, the market leader in the WWE that has God knows how many members on the writing team, and TNA's sort of general direction seems to be here, there and everywhere, even at the best of times. But it did make me wonder, because he talked about not overkilling, and it made me think, these are all well and good if these are Jeff's intentions, and I absolutely believe they are. It then becomes about who he puts around him. Who are the staff that work with him in sort of producing this product? And I'd be curious to see going forward what sort of the makeup of the team is, if you like, to see if what he suggested there, we could look at the individuals involved and think, yeah, we can see that that's the philosophy they're going with. Because it's all... And I'll mention his name now. If it was someone like a Russo, you just... No, I'm not going to go off on a rant, but you just think, if it's someone like a Russo, that's not Russo's philosophy. No. And you'd wonder how that would be intertwined.
If he surrounded himself with a Ross or a Cornette, and because
different ball game.
Yeah, Ross would be tremendous as the guy who's got experience working from an office perspective at a high level for something good. And obviously his roots are Mid-South, so that'd be interesting. Cornette's taken a lot of flack in terms of his kind of philosophy on wrestling and whether it would translate to the modern day, but I think he could still contribute greatly.
Absolutely. And the thing about going back to this idea of not rushing things, possibly not rushing storylines, not rushing angles, and the fact that he sort of parlayed that into the length of time of TV shows now, you know, a 3-hour Raw, 2-hour SmackDown.
That's what we said a million times, and it's fair to us, to ourselves, like, it's been so much TV, it's going to meander.
Yeah, and it just makes me wonder if, with a more old school philosophy, perhaps, would he be looking for a TV show to be a 1-hour show? You know, much more of a slow burner.
Cause I would hope so.
Because that's one thing I don't know if you all agree with me or not. Having watched some old Nitros recently, the older Nitros, the way that hour just is all very easy to watch and just sort of flows very naturally. Nothing, you know, I'm not saying that everything on those shows is great, but nothing feels forced. No. There's less of this sort of placeholder element.
Raw used to be 1 hour. Nitro was 1 hour. ECW changed the business, you know, from a Wrestling Revolution standpoint with a 1-hour show. So I think that the less is more. I mean, look at NXT. I mean, we talked about this last week, funnily enough, the whole thing, you know, NXT's, you know, system right now works because these guys don't get overexposed. You always do want more. Yo, when was the last time you watched a Raw show in full, that, you know, start to finish without your finger on the fast forward button and end it wanting more? It never happens. You never I've stopped watching SmackDown for a long time for that very reason. I get my fill.
Well, honestly, when you've even watched, whenever you ever watch Raw without fast forward, some part of it anyway.
Exactly.
Never mind get to the end of wanting more. Just going back to what Jeff's saying about obviously taking his time and going slow. I was thinking when he was saying, I'm sure he's going to come in for a lot of criticism. You know, he's just, you know, again, promoter talk, to making excuses. But the flip side is, I think he's, at the end of the day, he is right.
Yeah, he's totally right.
That TNA, that their first move straight onto pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to like rewind just for a brief moment when Carl was just talking about, like, with Jeff Jarrett, when he comes up with this GFW, like who he's going to surround himself with. I mean, we've already got a little bit of indication already the type of guys he is surrounding himself with. You talked about at the start of the interview, I mean, Jim Ross. I mean, he said like Jim Ross signed on straight away, but we should never, you know, mistake that for being like JR was so easy to get, because I mean, JR is such a big name. And to get even like Matt Stryker as well, I actually think like, we can all, you know.
We can all weave our nose. Striker in the WWE. Neither was I.
We can all weave our noses up at Matt Striker. But the actual answer that Jeff Jarrett gave for why he got him is actually the exact answer I was expecting to hear from him over the other names that he mentioned, who are obviously a lot more qualified in terms of, like, you know, just general intelligence and knowledge of the wrestling industry. But Striker does have a broadcasting background. He has experience
calling a live.
Exactly, he's got experience. And in a strange way, even though obviously I'm assuming they're not going to be going to with a WWE style of commentary, they're both familiar with that style. So there's at least there's going to be some sort of familiar connection to them in maybe how they work. I don't think they ever did work together when they were in the company, but I think there might be at least some familiar ground with them. And it's someone that, as we've discussed before, will know when to take a backseat to JR and let him do his calls.
Well, this is the thing. I hope that is true. I hope that is the case. Jeff kind of implied when, you know, he mentioned, you know, the person who'd be best working with Jim Ross would be a guy who, you know, would complement his style. And if that style complement is a guy that's willing to kind of ride Miss Daisy on this thing and chip in with a little bit of history that Jim Ross may not know, if that's Stryker's place, that's fine.
I'm somewhat sceptical at the notion of Matt Stryker taking a back seat to JR, because for me, in his commentary, he has a tendency to over-talk. He even did it during some promos. He'd throw lines in when I don't necessarily think the commentator needed to speak. And I'm not convinced that that will necessarily translate and mesh well with JR. I have I just foresee this sort of element where he would talk over JR as opposed to letting JR take the lead.
But at the same time, there's no way in hell I would imagine that Matt Stryker will come into this show unprepared.
He's going to be prepared.
Sure. Like, he's working with JR, who everyone on this table and Jeff Jarrett will agree is the greatest of all time. He's not going to come into this unprepared, because he's going to know JR's going to be on the ball, because I'm pretty certain JR's going to be on the ball, you know, to kill this phrase completely. But he's going to do his research, and he's going to know what he's going to talk about. He might not have known much about New Japan before he got signed up
for
this job.
On his podcast, he mentioned he's gone through like marathon sessions of watching like the last year or two.
He's going to really do his research on this. And like when me and Liam talked about this like earlier, after we recorded the interview, that he would probably play a kind of similar role to what Tanay did in WCW, where he was that guy during the Cruiserweight matches who kind of just gave you a little bit of the added knowledge that, you know, Tony Schiavone at the time or Bobby the Heenan didn't know about, and just say, look, here's some of the little facts and names, here's what this move's called, whatever. Because
Nakamura and Ibushi wrestled the G1 Climax
exactly.
last year.
JR's fantastic. I know he will know everything, but there is moments where time he might not know what something's called, or he might not know the specifics, and that's probably where Stryker will step in.
The only caveat I'd have there with the TNA comparison is that TNA worked as part of the three-man group. That was where that sort of insight from TNA worked. Stryker, to me, and his commentary experience is, I hate to use the term, but it's the sports entertainment brand. And he may well, you know, very much learn, do these marathon sessions. I just think it needs a more restrained person from Stryker, and they can have an idea of what they would like, but it's a completely different story when the show's going live and they're doing the commentary.
To be fair to Stryker, I think we should remember though that he's not going to have a certain man produce him in his ear.
Very true.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's all down to I think the biggest thing is how the two combine with the flow of the commentary, and I think that it will help not having. I'm pretty sure he's not going to have a Japanese guy shouting in his ear, and if he does, he's not going to understand him anyway. So, but I think so. I'm prepared to give him a little leeway and let's see what they come up with, to be honest. I trust in JR. He's going to be the same as always because, you know, he's the pro. I think as well, what kind of came through is when, again, it might have been Jeff's salesmanship, but he's talking about the enthusiasm and particularly Striker, you know, he's putting over Striker, he's trying hard to put over Striker of his own personal interest in the product that he's going to be calling. It seems like a lot of those guys who've come from that WWE environment are really looking forward to having the chains off and do some proper pro wrestling that's significant.
On a show they know is significant.
Exactly, that's the thing I was going to do. On a show that's significant, which one kind of leads us on to when he's talking about the impending boom of pro wrestling. I think, I guess it's perspective. If you're talking about kind of centralising all the indie interests around the world because it's giving access to people to view that, I can see that where it becomes the biggest independent, you know, non-mainstream, if you want to call it that, around the world. But I think the main thing, you're talking about a wide-scale wrestling boom, it's still going to come back to the WWE, and if they need to get hot for the mainstream to be hot. Otherwise, it's just hot within the wrestling circles itself.
Yeah, I suppose just that point. It's in the eye of the beholder when it comes to Jeff, and what does he consider to be a major boom?
Yeah, and I think too it's kind of a key thing to note that in terms of this boom, you mentioned the whole thing there about WWE, you know, needing to be the person that, you know, kind of, yeah. Jeff had a great line about, you know, if the ocean's rocking and the boats all sail successfully or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. And I guess the whole idea is that WWE needs to stir the ocean a little bit before a true boom can take place. Do you think it's possible for another company to come in and actually kind of shake, you know, perceptions a little bit there? Or
we said it last week, I think there is two elements to it. There is, do you, if Jeff's referring to kind of encapsulating the existing wrestling audience, that's, you know, maybe some have disappeared, some like myself and Carl, who don't watch New Japan a lot, but we're huge wrestling fans and we want something, is it, if it's galvanizing these disparate elements under one umbrella, I can see, you know, there's something valid to that, and that's irrespective of WWE. In fact, a shit WWE probably helps it, but I think for me personally, when someone says boom, I think it means a broadening of wrestling interest outside the existing sphere of fans. And for me, for that to happen in a worldwide stage, it has to be start with the WWE.
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting, because I mean, obviously he mentioned about like the pay-per-views. You were talking about like the death of pay-per-views, and like it was nice to hear like some of the comments he was making,
that,
saying
that
like
really encouraged me a lot.
The problem with the pay-per-views is that they're doing 12 of them every year, which is absolutely right. You need to lower the model down.
I was encouraged to hear him not buy the pay-per-views dying straight away, because there are pay-per-views that do sell and always sell. I'm not so sure about the 12, because I think if the product was hot, I think you could sell 12. They've done it before.
They did do it before, but again, it was a different time in the industry. But, you know, when you were talking about like the TV deals and so on, you were talking about the 1 hour. I'm tricky. I'm in a rock and a hard place with that. I don't know whether 1 hour is best or whether 2 hours is, because I do watch NXT every week. And whilst it is good, 1 hour isn't a lot of time when you got like as big a roster as them. It does end up being a lot of like four or five small matches and then like one kind of big match.
To the point of a 1 hour show, I think a 1 hour show can work if your number of pay-per-views is less, because you've got that, you know, a larger window to work with. The roster thing is an interesting one, because if it's going to stand alone as its own company, how do you sort of secure that roster and have that regular talent available? Because they're not going to leave the AAA dates, they're not going to leave the New Japan dates.
Yeah, that's key.
So that's how he manages to pull that off, you know, that's sort of, that's threading the needle sort of thinking, which it could be incredibly difficult. I agree that I don't think it's necessarily 12 pay-per-views a year that's the issue, although I will say, state for the record, I am a fan of having less pay-per-views. I've always said, you know, in the perfect world where I'm given the book, the WWF only has 6 pay-per-views a year. But it's not so much about...
You couldn't do that today, though. Imagine what the weekly TV would turn into then. Okay.
Well, that's Jesus. That's what I'm saying. It's perfect. Well, you'd have to have faith in your creative team. Mm, yeah. But
although just to go on to that whole, you know, very very brief throw in here, although this back to Carl, what you mentioned about the, you know, Jeff saying, talking about, to, you know, overcomplicating things. And it did come out in The Observer, as I said last week off air to you, Carl, Ryan Ward was the sole person who wrote that NXT show, approved by Triple H. Meanwhile, you got Monday Night Raw, which is a gigantic round table filled with
20 writers,
20 or so, with Vince at the head of the table.
But that's the wrong approach. It's not just Raw. It's their whole weekly main roster program is part of the. That's the understandable side of why they have this ridiculous roster of writers, is because it's not 3 hours. It's not even 3 hours. It's talking, you know, 6-7 hours of. That's their environment that they're trying to perpetuate each and every week to build to whatever show they're plugging that is not a pay per view.
Okay, he's got to you know, get the signature off Triple H, but it's one guy who's thinking, right, beginning, middle, end. This is my vision. That's what the show is. Triple H, do you like it? Yes, he does. Okay. Whilst when you got these bit of writers where they're just adding little bits here and there, and it's not even like hours. It's not like he's given a team of writers like an hour and another team an hour. It's almost like segment by segment, these people are giving different things. And so, like, that's why, like, for ages now with Raw, and I don't even watch SmackDown, I'll be honest. I only watch really NXT and I read about Raw now. It just feels so convoluted, and like they're just pulling in different directions. One week one person will get a push, and the next week he's not. And it's just like due down to the writing, because so many people are having different ideas that this. Plus there's no single drive, because Vince McMahon isn't driving it anymore. He's just sitting there ticking stuff.
I think a lot of it is Vince blowing hot and cold so much of the time.
I think that therein lies the problem. I think you've got that wrong. It's not Vince ticking stuff. The issue is these writers, for all we know, could have the best ideas in the world. I'm not accusing them of that by any means, but they could have the best ideas in the world. But if Vince gets off the shit can one day in a bad mood, those ideas don't count for anything. They can all come up with these ideas. In the end, 9 times out of 10, what do you hear all the old employees say? Well, we just end up doing what Vince wanted to do anyway.
Yeah, they took, in fact, the structure of like a comedy show, say, and WWE have kind of mirrored that, because probably the prestige of what they consider themselves as well. But what probably everyone's forgetting here is that multiple man writing crew structure of a comedy show, say like Friends, there's not usually a overarching story, character arc and story arcs within that kind of a show. They tend to be standalone episodes, yeah. And that is kind of what is really wrong with one of the things that's wrong with Raw these days. It should be an overarching story from week to week with a logic there, but they've gone down a direction which it's a writing style and structure that doesn't really suit the core product that we all know and love anyway. Yeah. You look at like a series like a Breaking Bad, which is, you know, it's a self-contained story within a series, say. It's a different writing approach to the one they've taken now.
Yeah.
That self-contained series, although it's not a self-contained series, it's still the development of characters is more akin to wrestling than a comedy series. It's just something interesting. Yeah.
The whole point of this, obviously, we mentioned in Global Force, is that this format, this would hopefully not be the case with an alternative. If it would be one more focused vision, and if it was more simple. I mean, that's the thing, too. Just a simpler product of guys wanting to win and being treated like stars and cutting great promos.
A wrestling show where the guys are there because they want to wrestle and win and be the best at wrestling. That's what it's about. And
yeah,
it's not hard, but
yeah, you build these guys like stars. And
I mean, look at that formula for Mid-South. You know, by the time you take adverts, commercials out of the equation, it's effectively a 45-minute show, and the formula is very simple: a recap of the major event from the previous week, some enhancement matches to get your stars over. Maybe one or two more competitive matches, perhaps, depending on the week, as a slight variance. Reference to future matches down the line. And vignettes for guys that aren't there that you want to showcase, or guys that you've got coming in.
Yeah.
Does that fly in this day and age, though?
Well, this is the thing. And this is actually kind of part of the interesting debate, where, like, to me, if we're going to talk about Global Force and hoping that Global Force becomes something, you know, big, and or at least an interesting alternative... how much of what you just said, Carl, is actually what you would like to see yourself, or actually think would fly? Because I don't think those kind of the squash matches would fly so well compared to the WWE.
The squash matches wouldn't fly at all. I've heard a lot of wrestlers in interviews sort of hark back to that's how they'd want the TV now. They'd want the stars to be smoking some job guy from, you know, whatever the local town would be. I don't think that would fly. But you could maybe just have two or three fairly competitive matches. You know, I still think introductory vignettes will work fine.
Oh, sure.
A standard recap of the previous week will work fine. That in-ring element, yes, you would have to change that. But I think the rest of it would translate fine. If it's a shorter one-hour show, something like that, and if it's a one-hour show, hell, you don't need that team of writers. You only need one or two guys. I think that structure, sort of in a broad strokes way, can still work.
So kind of closer to what the original Monday Nitro was, in a sense.
Yeah.
What you mentioned before.
The business now, to me, is made far more complicated than it needs to be. I mean, they have this team of writers in WWF. I don't necessarily think they use that team of writers properly. I'm not saying that they would be great if they did. But I just think there is a need for a more simplified approach now. And it's, you know, it seems like that's Jarrett's philosophy. And if they're able to create a standalone company, I'm very intrigued and what's the word? Well, I'm just generally looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm encouraged
by
it.
Encouraged to see how it starts out the gate.
The thing is now, unfortunately, because we're so jaded after watching WWE for so long, you always have that expectation of like, well, is it actually going to be what we want? Because there have been so many companies that have come along and there's always things, is this really what we want it to be? Is it doing things properly? Is it... It was just, I thought it was a fun conversation with Jeff where everything that I asked and was hoping he wouldn't give a certain answer to, he did give the opposite answer to what I was hoping he wouldn't, if that makes sense. Follow me, people!
I think that he alluded to the fact that he'd learnt from previous mistakes, but he didn't want to harp on about them too much, which I can completely understand, given the nature he's trying to promote these future shows. It wasn't a discussion about the failures of TNA, you know, right, wrong, or otherwise, what he perceives those to have been. He's clearly learned, to me it seems, in the sense of pay-per-view. He's not going to be doing, you know, Global Force Wrestling is not going to be a weekly pay-per-view show that's relying on 50,000 buys. He would be, if it went sort of onto a pay-per-view model for bigger shows, it certainly looks like he would have a smaller number than one a month. And I think he's got the general handle right in that pay-per-view isn't dead. I think it's just a case that it's oversaturated, and that doesn't just go for wrestling. When I say that, I'm incorporating boxing, because he mentioned Mayweather, but outside of Mayweather fights, boxing doesn't draw at the moment.
Yeah, boxing's not doing too well. The last Pacquiao fight didn't do too well.
Pacquiao fight didn't do too well. And there's a bit of a misconception about Mayweather that he's always been this big pay-per-view draw. He wasn't a pay-per-view draw before his fight with De La Hoya, so it's only in the last sort of 5 or 6 years that his fights have drawn more.
But they
absolutely do. But that speaks to the fact of it's one pay per view with the one star that's drawing it. You know,
it's the thing now, the star, isn't it? You say,
yeah, that's wrestling. That's what it's always been.
The industry doesn't. The industry's not healthy overall. But that one guy,
star draws the money. And that's the thing. And that's one of the things again has been a flaw with WWE is that they don't want the star to draw because they don't know in a position where once the star goes, they're fucked.
They want
the company to draw, and that's where you get this kind of mishmash of lack of emotion because you're watching the WWE circus. Whereas with Global Force, that you know, listen to Jarrett talk. And is your idea to bring in people from different places if you're going to do shows and pay-per-views as a standalone? And he said yes. So I think that it'd be quite interesting to see if that would fly because yeah, how can you build stars and you're bringing them in from the outside, yet you have to get them over on your TV first? There's a lot of questions
on
this.
Well, that's what I mean. What audience is he servicing? Is he servicing a brand new virgin audience, or is he appealing to guys like us? So if you're appealing to guys like us and you're making Global almost like a Super Bowl of the
NWA of the...
Yeah, so you got a few New Japan, you got some AAA guys. That's a different take. Again, is that going to service a general population? I'd probably say not, but in terms of a global existing fan base...
Is it sustainable?
It solves one problem of... obviously, first of all, the creation of talent. You're sourcing it from elsewhere. But also the maintenance of that talent, because the trouble in a company, like TNA is the example, you can be a star going into it, but if the company's insignificant, your star power will be drained straight away and you'll mean nothing. So
see Angle, Kurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Hardy, Jeff.
And I suppose that's the... that's things. What if you're able to sustain it in that manner? Because you've mentioned before, Kieran, that you know the market leader has got to be performing well for there to be a global boom. But there's nothing to suggest that you can't necessarily sustain a company off fans that are there that are just sort of disenfranchised in a sense. And sort of trying to tie it in with the sort of pay-per-view theory I'm trying to get across here. If you're drawing the talent from different promotions for different pay-per-views, you're not overexposing that talent either. You know, we mentioned there Mayweather draws big when he appears, but you don't have Floyd Mayweather every month, because if you have him every month, they're not going to do close to a million buys. You know, that number would dwindle over time. So if you're able to sort of marry up these strands, if you like, for, you know, this month's pay-per-view is going to involve AAA talent, and you know, 2 months down the line it's going to be New Japan, and maybe if you're able to create some sort of super show and tie them in, almost in the sense of, you know, touring guys in the territory days, if you're able to get these guys to match up for a series of matches or to sort of intertwine and work with each other over several months to build to a big show, then they can go back to their respective promotions, and then you can, you know, bring other guys in for that, for the next few months to showcase them on TV. It's hard to see how it works in a TV sense, I admit, because people are looking for sort of familiar faces that you wouldn't necessarily always have. You know, if you're tuning in for certain guys and they're not there for 3 months straight, how do you still maintain them? So I appreciate this. It's very difficult. It's not tried and tested. But I don't necessarily think that doesn't mean it can't work.
Fair play to Jeff. What he's doing right now is, it might not be directly what he meant by putting things in place, but that's what he is doing. He's getting connections, and I think it's it's the long term. And
he seems really ambitious too. We haven't mentioned it, but you know, he outright said there, you know, yes, the interest is there. He wants to put Triple Mania on pay per view. He wants to do the same thing. I guess it'll be August of this year, and that's a pretty big thing.
Yeah, and in fairness to Jeff, he doesn't seem to be under any illusions as to how difficult it's going to be. He referenced there how difficult it was just to get people to the table to sort of discuss and go over a general framework for the show on January the 4th, and how difficult that was just to sort of get the blue touch paper lit, if you like. So he's clearly under no illusions. So that in itself is encouraging. He's, you know, this is a man who's going in clearly with his eyes wide open, and hopefully nothing would take him by surprise. And what was the phrase he used?
Choke on that, slap nuts.
No, I'm talking about the six P's.
Oh, proper planning prevents piss poor performance.
So he's, you know, it's sort of his cute way of getting it across. But he clearly, he's well prepared, shall we say, for the difficulties that are going to be involved.
The interesting thing with this initial structure that he's creating so far, because he hasn't actually announced a roster. He said that he does want one, and you just mentioned the name very briefly, and we've talked about this before. This has, at least in some sort of rough blueprint, the kind of shape of the NWA. Not that there's going to be one champion, not that like he's going to own all these other companies and so on, but more as in just there's one kind of company that's helping oversee the other companies in getting promoted more. Because so far, New Japan is mainly promoted in Japan. There's obviously like slight awareness in other countries, but not to the extent that they wish. And so on with AAA or any promotions in the UK or Europe and so on. And so it seems like before he's actually establishing any sort of roster and establishing what would essentially be the GFW roster, he's creating awareness for these other companies, which has a very kind of NWA-esque about it. And it seems like, at least in the initial blueprint, that seems to be what he's doing. I don't know what everyone else's opinions on that is whether they think that he's creating, at least for initial foundation, an NWA. Not saying that this is what GFW is going to be, but from a foundation standpoint, I think it's actually pretty sound. And having, kind of in a good way, what WCW did do right in the Monday Night Wars for the brief period of time, where they had multiple cultural wrestling on there. You know, they brought in the luchas, they had the Japanese wrestlers, and whilst yes, they were down on the undercard, they were the ones that had all the great wrestling, which is where the industry seems to be leaning right now, where people kind of want to go back to the wrestling a little bit.
Well,
you know,
fans
still want the stories.
We'll always say that, though.
Yeah, they still want the stories. Obviously, you still have to have the stories, but they want the wrestling action back again. You know, they don't want to see the Bellas talking about Total Divas.
Well, no one would anyway. No one ever did.
Through these associations and good working relationships, he's going to get a handpick of some of the best talent to create like a really great diverse roster. He's kind of like surveying the landscape as opposed to just being like kind of laser pointed in terms of like what his direction is going to be. He goes, right, tunnel vision, that's it, thank you. And in terms of just going like, I think the vision is this is what the world needs. He's turning around and saying, I'm going to throw everything at you and you tell me what you need.
I see. I honestly think it's because there's not that much concrete in place yet. I think it is a contacts thing. I think he's in the contacts phase, quite frankly,
yeah.
and of an exposure phase. And
well, he did allude to that, didn't he? He was talking at this point. It's brand awareness. That's a lot of what this is. We're getting the name out there.
He's taking his time.
We
with
want
it.
People to talk it, about us before we. Yeah, he doesn't want to bomb out there when he's got, you know, three cards and a five hand deck. He wants to actually have the full. He wants to have everything ready when he doesn't.
Think, again, as well, he can't. He has got a roster in place with a perfect TV structure that he wants in place, but he's not going to reveal that anyway because, A, what if he doesn't get it? Then he looks like a dick.
The deal's never done until it's on.
And why would he show his hand? Yeah, exactly. So I think there's logistical issues. He pretty, without doubt, say he's got what he wants in mind, but I think the reason he's so coy on so many aspects is because it's not concrete yet.
He doesn't want to go out there promising something, but he doesn't know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
And the important an important distinction to make, G, you used WCW as an example and Bischoff's time at the helm. It's worth remembering WCW already had a foothold. How long have they been on TBS? You know,
for decades and decades in
one guise or another, wrestling had always been there. So they already had a place in the market. It may have dwindled from its peak when Bischoff first came in, but there was a familiarity and there was a brand there already.
And a built-in audience.
And it was all, for all that great talent that worked so well on the undercard of those shows, it was always underpinned by the biggest wrestler of all time in Hulk Hogan.
And that's the thing, and that's just one final point, I guess, to kind of to address what Chase said. I do agree in that a lot of, obviously, I mean, a lot of the appeal of this New Japan show is that we're going to see a fantastic show. We're going to see great wrestling.
Yeah.
But with that said, I don't think you could build an entire promotion, right? You need the star power. You would need somebody who can connect and make a big difference. It's the same element with any other... because if that was the case, Ring of Honor would be doing absolutely fantastic right now, because that's what their entire company is built on. But at the same point, it's great wrestling, but it's great wrestling, and how relevant is it? That's the key. There's no relevance there to anything.
Yeah, it doesn't penetrate past us.
But yeah, exactly.
And you need that... I don't want to say mainstream, but you need that big North American star, whoever that may be.
Whether you can create whatever it is.
Yeah, when it comes to your having your own set rosters and a standalone company, with that being the ultimate aim, you need that star in place that sort of, you know, everyone revolves around. At least, you know, at least for the first year or so, you've got to have that star there to help, you know, once you've created them, help create the new guys. Because without wanting to sound narrow-minded, a large American audience, a large British audience, they may get access to Global Force Wrestling on TV. But let's be honest, if they haven't had strong exposure to it prior to that, they're going to look and think, I don't know these guys. You know, and if they don't know them, that action's going to have to be absolutely fantastic in the first instance to hook them and to keep them there.
Agree.
It's worse than that. Why would people watch to begin with, if they need hooking? They're not even going to watch to start with, unless they're going out of their way to, like people, you know, like us. That's the whole point of
that's not the casual audience.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point with creating the casual audience. Are you trying to create a new fan base or service existing fans? And I think there's something there.
Which
though,
I suppose, again, goes back to your original point of you can't have that major boom by just catering to the, or attempting to cater to, the disenfranchised.
This is actually kind of like the one probably major problem I actually have. I don't know whether I discussed it on the last podcast when we were talking about British promotion. Is the whole thing about the new star, like or the main star? Sorry, and I absolutely agree with you. You know, history's proven that the success of the company has always been based around one guy. That's a
star-driven business.
In terms of GFW being that having that type of star, if it's someone new from the roster, that's going to take time anyway. My problem lies in getting somebody else who's already established being that guy, saying, like, you know, Jeff Jarrett needs to make that signing, that one signing that'll make people go, ah, I want to go and watch GFW now. Like when, you know,
I'm gonna Randy Orton, he's the guy.
Like, you know, and I'm going to use, sorry, I'm going to use WCW again. You know, like when WCW
Carl
signed,
is looking at me when, so stone-jawed.
When WCW signed Hulk Hogan, yes, WCW already had a foothold in the business already, but like signing Hulk Hogan, at least in the short term,
turned
had a big
around.
Impact. Yeah, turned a lot of things around. My question to you is, in the current climate, let's just imagine everyone in WWE is satisfied with what they're doing, okay?
That can't be possible.
Yeah, I know it's not possible. Let's just imagine, right? And they have no intention to leave a decent paycheck, I don't know, or at least a solid paycheck, to go for a company that they don't know is going to succeed, right? Outside of WWE, what big name can you think of that Jeff Jarrett could sign for that company?
Honestly, you'd need the Hogan of this generation, which is John Cena, which is not going to happen unless he gets caught with a 16-year-old girl in a hotel room or something like that. 15-year-old, no.
This is wherein lies the problem, right? Unless someone from WWE jumped, right, you would have to wait for someone to leave WWE for Jeff Jarrett to sign, because there's no one else out there. I can't see who Jeff Jarrett can sign that isn't in WWE already, or willing to leave WWE.
That would immediately make a difference.
Yeah, that will make a difference. I don't see it. So he's going to have to go with a brand new star. He's going to have to start from scratch, and he might have to work on his own audience at first, and then maybe through getting, you know, good word of mouth for saying, oh, you know, they've got these new stars, they're doing something different to WWE, and then maybe the old fans who are, you know, just there to see the big guys might turn around and start watching that product to see who these new big guys are.
But to that point, you're speaking very much in immediate terms, in the very near future. And Jarrett, from that interview, clearly gave the impression he's prepared to wait. So there's no guarantee he's desperate for someone or needs someone right now to make that difference. So 5 months down the line, who knows what individual's going to be employed, not employed. Dare I say, and this is pie-in-the-sky thinking, we know a certain Mr. Lesnar's probably not going to be around much longer. You know, and Lesnar will go anywhere for the right amount of zeros on a paycheck. I'm not saying it's going to... I'm not saying, no.
Can you imagine?
Everyone's looking at me sort of blankly.
No, I completely agree.
I'm not saying this will happen.
The point you're making is anything can happen in 6 months.
Anything can happen in 6 months. And if you were looking for a guy, you haven't got to sign him long term. You give Lesnar a check and say, here's $2 million for, what's he getting, $5 million now for 30 dates? Here's $2 million for 10 dates. I'm not saying that Jarrett has that kind of financial backing, but, you know, just theoretically, are you telling me you couldn't get enough eyeballs initially for Lesnar appearances throughout the course of a six-month period? You absolutely could.
Obviously, someone like Lesnar would be, and he actually got the perfect example there, Lesnar would be the perfect person to get in on this, because obviously he has mass appeal, not just to wrestling, but also to UFC and so on and so forth. Looking at Lesnar, looking at his current contract, I mean, that guy will ask for a lot for next to nothing, to do next to nothing. So whilst ideally he would be the perfect guy for Jeff Jarrett to sign, I don't see it happening because...
Well, that's why I said pie in the sky.
I didn't say it would happen. I'm just using that as that would be the ideal example.
Hey, I think we're kind of all assuming he intends for Global to be a North American-based company, but I just don't know. With the contacts he's creating, I see... And with the internet... Obviously, he needs America... To have a long-term impact in America, he needs TV. But I just see him getting on the internet bandwagon, which he's already on, and they're the connections he's getting in place. So I just think, in terms of talking about talent, it's far too early, because we have no idea what the setup's going to be. But I do see a massive influence, like the Tanahashis. I mean, can Tanahashi draw in America? Maybe expectations and actually the realities of the situation on how he's intending to draw. I think it's far too early. It's all hypothetical, one way or the other. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's... as in the name, it's more global reach than just a North American focus.
Yeah, just to wrap it up, there was one line he said there where he mentioned that television is one aspect of a wrestling company, which I think actually is quite a decent illustration of where his head is at right now, where he doesn't want that focus on the TV deal just yet.
Yeah, you look, well, it's the industry he's working in right now. It's the internet industry. It's the instant online demand services. That's
New Japan World, WWE Network.
Yeah, I mean, and this is what Jeff's now submersing himself in, and what he's looking to do with AAA as well. So I just think I see a broadening of that with the contacts. So maybe as you said, a global NWA maybe his idea. It's kind of like the almost what UFC is has intended for a few years now. Again, invest in local markets to get talent, say, to then expand your project in that market. Conor McGregor in the Irish market, for example, you know, Dan Hardy previously over here. Yeah, I think I said there's more than one way to draw, and I think if he's not focusing 100% on the North American market, yeah, we might be surprised with a different kind of direction for the industry, maybe.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the Jarrett interview and for listening this far. We are going to be taking a two-week hiatus because of, obviously, it's the Christmas season. But I do want to thank everybody that's listened to us throughout this year. Again, I want to thank Ashley Griffiths for hooking up the interview. I want to thank Jeff Jarrett very much for coming on. Wrestle Kingdom 9, we will be returning in the new year with a show right after Wrestle Kingdom 9. We're going to be watching the show and giving our thoughts on it, reviewing it, which will be quite interesting given the divergence around this table about how much New Japan we've watched previously. This will be quite interesting, I think. Yeah. Quite a good take, quite a good look at how this show goes down to different audiences. So, thank you very much once again. For G. John Chase.
Climate.
For Carl Jones.
After this show, I just can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight.
And for Kevin O'Rourke.
Thank you very much, folks. Have a great new year and enjoy your Christmas.
I am Liam O'Rourke and we are out of here.
This is what professional wrestling is all about.
On Sunday, January 4th, Global Force Wrestling presents...
What a night! What athletes! What an event!
The Worldwide Professional Wrestling Spectacular.
What a way to kick off 2015!
That only happens once a year live from the Tokyo Dome in Japan. Wrestle Kingdom 9.
Wrestle Kingdom 9! It just doesn't get any bigger!
Showcasing the best wrestling on the planet.
This is good old JR Jim Ross, and there's nowhere I'd rather be than ringside in Tokyo.
In what will be the wrestling pay-per-view event of the year.
This is pro wrestling like it was meant to be.
Global Force Wrestling presents New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom 9, live from the Tokyo Dome, Sunday, January 4th, exclusively on pay-per-view.
Wrestle Kingdom 9 on pay-per-view. The world will be watching.